So it's June 28th, 2026, if you're listening to this on the initial netcast, or you're on the Huff Archive, and congratulations in either case, you got great taste. Tip of the hat, first of all, to Goddess Gunilla, who is the kind of the webmaster who keeps the Huff website in check, along with Vision Song Valerie, who, when she's not busy strumming on Pacific Avenue and trying to reclaim some of the lost sensibility, or I guess it's the Love and Justice, Peace, Love and Justice band down there, that she's every Monday from, I'm not sure if it's 1:30 to 5:30 or 3:30 to 5:30. It's in front of the Palomar if you want to listen to some of their music. Completely free, so this is not a commercial announcement. Hopefully my sound levels are good. I got some technical assistance on this after many complaints and many past shows. So thank you for technical assistance, Gunilla, Valerie, and of course our duck, who quacks in occasionally and helps out as well. So this is going to be another one of the patchwork shows, because I'm starting very late and I'm tired to begin with, so I'm afraid I may fumble and mumble a bit, and who knows. But I'm going to try and do it as best I can, so bear with me. I think flashback time is going to be way back to stuff that I've not ever played before, but recorded, more than 32 or 33 years ago in 1992, when there was no free radio here in Santa Cruz, at least none that I was acquainted or associated or, you know, broadcasting on. But I've got a few items that are contemporary to start with, perhaps not as much as I'd wish, but let's kick off the mood with Songs of Social Significance, or let's put it this way, the urging that we begin singing Songs of Social Significance.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So some warm hearts and who knows, happy faces are showing up at the Santa Cruz Homeless Union meetings. Although we're still getting a kind of a sparse turnout, and the leadership is still extremely overworked, trying to do too many things at once, in my view, which is why the original Santa Cruz Homeless Union kind of disappeared beneath the waves for a number of years, after a good beginning with injunctive and activist protests that had some real significance in the homeless community, establishing more decent visiting regulations for the 1220 River Street Salvation Army run encampment. And of course, an injunction protecting the Ross camp while it was there for about a week. But it was the first such injunction in Santa Cruz that I remember, at least in my period of time. So here's an interview with a woman named Sarah Plachette, who apparently knew me from days of yore, but I had forgotten her, but she reminds me, and I'm glad she did. This is some discussion we had right after the Santa Cruz Homeless Union meeting, which happens every Wednesday, in case you want to check them out. They're at the fireside room of the Red Cavalry Episcopal Church at Cedar and Lincoln Streets in the side room, and they go from 3:30 to 5. So check them out, and then check out Huff the next day, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, there at the Sub Rosa Cafe, as they've been for a long time, and they go from 1:30 to 3:30, and sometimes longer. So I think we may be playing some of them too, but let's begin with this interview that I had afterward with Sarah. Today is the 24th of June. It's about 4:30, and I'm talking with
Sarah Pichette.
And Sarah arrived at the Santa Cruz Homeless Union meeting, which happens every Wednesday, at the Fireside Room of the Red Church at 3:30 in the afternoon. And Sarah, you had a collegial close relationship with attorney and activist who I called Catnip, Kate Wells.
Yes, I did, and she was one of my heroes. She's super amazing. I was her assistant director at her second cannabis club that she had over on Seabright Ave in the year 2000.
This was the club from which she was excluded by bizarre Barrios Unidos claims of some sort of too close to a school.
Yes, that's exactly what happened, and Galt School was right there too. It was parked too close to the school, they told us. It was also due to WAM. At the time, WAM laws were being written, and WAM did not want...
For those who don't know, what is WAM?
Women's Association.
Women and Men's Medical Marijuana Mishmash? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's essentially, as I understand it, a club that is a collective run by Valerie and Mike Corral, consisting of a couple hundred people who grow their own marijuana for medical use and have a particularly sympathetic ear from the city government, which is good, but unfortunately they have a monopoly ear, which is bad. Mm-hmm. You were the person who ran Kate Wells' second club, which was called?
Santa Cruz Cannabis Pharmaceuticals, and it was on 1420 Seabright Ave.
And how long did that club last?
From, I believe we opened around April, and we were shut down by the feds that were parked outside of us, or outside. We were shut down in August, and it was due to WAM wanted clubs to grow their own medicine and make their own medicine and not have a buying and selling production model.
What was your reaction to this concern of WAMs, legitimate, illegitimate, or some other category?
I think that if we had followed that model, it wouldn't have been a bad one necessarily, but I know that that summer I want to say we had 3,153 patients, and of them we had more than 100 patients die, and that was due to they were all had serious terminal illnesses.
And after that, I guess even more important would be how many patients were cut off from their medication because you closed.
Oh, that would have been a couple thousand.
And did you hear anything about the casualty rates there?
No. But the director, Rudy Melton, he ended up taking his own life afterwards.
And this year, this was April to August of what year?
2000.
26 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And an interesting side note, the thing that got me there was I have a back injury that I've had since I was 10 years old. I have not taken part in pharmaceuticals, and I've always gone for more plant medicine. When in August of 99, my house got raided because somebody was selling weed out of my house, or so that was the claim. The cops came in and raided it. Somebody else had a backpack that had a quarter pound of hash in it, and I got taken into jail. Kate Wells was my lawyer for free, and I owed her money, so I started working there to pay her back and evolved into the assistant director.
Did you beat the rep?
No, actually. I took the fall for everybody.
And what kind of a penalty did you suffer for your crime?
30 days in G-Dorm.
And how was your experience there?
Terrible. Absolutely terrible. I also lost custody of my daughter, who got kidnapped through the family, and I didn't see her for 17 and a half years after that.
How's she doing now?
She's all grown up and good, and we found each other again.
Well, you're smiling, that's for sure. So, did you have further associations with Kate? Because, of course, Kate helped us on many an occasion, though her means became leaner and leaner as time went on. So,
I continued being Katie's housekeeper on and off for all these years. And just kind of using that as an excuse to go over and hear all of her brilliance and all of the amazing stories that she always had to tell about... the most important one being the first woman with a sexual harassment lawsuit against Bank of America when she was working there and her husband was going to law school in San Francisco. Is that right?
Something like that. I don't
something
know the,
like that.
I don't know the details. She showed me newspaper clippings, I think, at one point.
Yep, she was the first. She's an incredible woman.
Who are the remains of a meeting inside?
I see you.
That's Kirill, if you don't know him.
I met him last week, but I didn't see any of them down at Coral Street when I went.
He'll be there. He actually was there, but he might have gone to help people move property off, help them carry it to the Pogonip and so forth. While you and I are talking, for those who don't know, who are listening, there's a sweep scheduled for tomorrow at 7 o'clock in the morning on June 24th on Coral Street. And I've been encouraging people who come to this meeting to consider going there, though that's not going to be me, but still. You expressed some really strong perspectives. In fact, you were even a little wary of having a conversation with me because you felt, you know, you might be too incensed or too upset at the moment or just carried away by the...
I went last week to one of the raids, and I just wanted to see what was happening. And it has been... a long time since I've gone down Coral Street, and I just wanted to see for myself. And the things that I saw were much different than what a typical, what I would have thought. And what I saw the police using their resources to harass and move people along. And I didn't see them use any of their resources to target any of the individuals that were probably there selling drugs or the women who seem to be captivated by what's going on down there. I feel a strong pull to find a way to get through to them and help get them out of there, as I've been on and off of the streets my whole life. I understand that things grow beyond your control and you end up in places that you don't think you can get out of. And I would love to help create a pathway for those women to get away from the men down there that are using them for the things that they're being used for.
You're talking about pimps, right?
I think that there were some pimps down there and they were instructing women to empty their tents and move their stuff. And
it seemed like you that it was a business rather than a residence going on, or is that putting it too strongly?
I understand everybody down there looked like they were in a psychosis. You know, they looked so mentally distraught, and I understand when you're on drugs, when you're on the streets, even if you're on the streets and you're not on drugs, you're in survival mode, and that raises your cortisol and all of these things to, even if you're not on drugs, to put you in panic mode. And the level of whatever that they're putting these people through is not helping them. It's not going to make the situation better. What would make the situation better, from my point of view, when I went down to the to Housing Matters and to the shelter that used to be open every morning for showers and breakfast and, you know, mail and taking care of people. Now I just see a bunch of college kids who probably shouldn't even be in that environment, honestly. And they don't have the experience or the know-it-all to see what's going on to fix the problem. Not saying I know it all, but I can see by looking what a majority of the problem is there when it comes to the survival mode that they can't get out of.
So, I'm going to ask you
to... Very overwhelming. There's so much to it.
What would you do if you were taking over the... How could the resources be better apportioned there?
So I applied for the job of the director of the new shelter.
Well, which shelter are we talking about?
The new big one that they built that looks like a prison.
It's not the Harvey West.
Yes.
It is the Harvey West shelter.
Harvey West Suites is what they call it.
Suites, I see.
I really need a job. I think that it would be something that I think that those people need a family and they need love, which is way stronger than just resources and some college kid giving them a list of phone numbers to call.
Generally go into answering machines and waiting lists.
And AI and trying to navigate phone systems, just that in itself is so frustrating. What I would do if I was down there, I would give the people who need jobs, jobs. I would put the people back in the kitchen who live there. Put the people back, you know, that's the best way to get people into their own housing. Give them a job. And not get, you know, they're not, I hate to put it this way, but you don't have to pay them as much as you do a college graduate. Right? So
could be. I mean, I'm not sure what they're, even if they're paying decent wages to the people who work there.
They very much are, yes.
Really? What's the average wage? Any idea?
I think between $23 and $27, which might not be a living wage.
Including benefits? Or?
And they get excellent benefits. 401ks, like almost 20 days off a year paid, things like that.
Is your average employees or the high-level ones? Or
I think it's everybody who works there.
Really?
Their compensation package includes medical, dental, 403Bs instead of 401Ks. It's about 20 days off paid, vacation and sick time.
And what was your experience in applying? I take it you were rejected or you haven't heard yet?
I haven't heard back yet.
But you're still hopeful?
I'm very hopeful, yeah.
So you could be the new Fuhrer that we're protesting against.
Or I could be the person that works with everybody to make the system function for the people who it's designed for, instead of the industrial homeless complex and the billionaires making money off of it.
Did Kate Wells teach you nothing?
I don't know what the future will bring, but I know that between the things going on in our federal government, the things going on in our local government, that we really need to be paying attention. We need to be awake and aware of the things happening and look around and see who's paying attention. Because Santa Cruz used to be an earth-based, hippie-loving surfer town. And ever since weed got legalized, the cash crop got eradicated, the CZU fire, we have lost so many earth-based loving people and humanitarians due to the cost of living here that now all of these techie, brolarchy, computer people are moving in and they have a lot of money and they don't care about anybody but themselves. So I really hope to see our community come together better and work to help each other.
But now it's musical break time. Here's David Rovics from The Open Veins of Latin America, something he did in January and is posted on his website. A little music from David Rovix.
In the halls of power in Washington, D.C., now that the pandemic has the planet on its knees, combined with the embargo since they tightened up the screws, they see something flammable, they want to light a fuse. The empire can't pass up a chance to undermine and pursue their imperial designs. Los Estados Unidos se creen el país elegido por Dios para acabar con el mundo en nombre de la libertad. From the halls of power in Washington, D.C., to the collapsing buildings on the shores of Miami, you can see them on the TV, the crusaders of the North, talking from the tent camps about bringing freedom forth. From the land where there's a massacre each and every day, listen to the president say, Los Estados Unidos se creen el país elegido por Dios para acabar con el mundo en nombre de la libertad. The halls of power in Washington, D.C., in the wake of all the blood they have spilled across the sea and across the very nation they claim is so free, where one in four children each night go to bed hungry. The riot police are rioting here, somewhere every night. But other people need more rights. Los Estados Unidos se creen el país elegido por Dios para acabar con el mundo en nombre de la libertad. In the name of freedom.
At all the levels.
A noble thought, of course. What have you been doing to survive all these years?
I've been a caregiver for the last 20 years. I have an injury from when I was a kid, and I applied for disability a couple of years ago. I've worked as long as I could for as hard as I could. I have been playing this terrible game with the Social Security Disability Office where I've done everything that they wanted me to do, yet I'm still getting denied, even though I have tons of proof of my injury. I just got my third denial. I could appeal it. There are right now 800,000 applications in for Social Security disability. Of those, more than 50% will be denied.
Why do you say this?
It's the statistics. The statistics behind Social Security are absolutely horrifying. People are getting kicked off, and they took a lot of the administrative costs and changed it from the people who approve the applications or deny them, the people from that process, and they've moved them all over to doing reviews. So more people are getting kicked off of Social Security right now than are getting accepted to be on the program. And to be on the program, they're not approving even 50% of the people who are applying.
These stats come from what authority?
You can look on the Social Security's website.
They will tell you 50% are being denied, really.
We could ask Google right now. Let's do it for fun.
Okay.
How many people have been denied Social Security disability this year? Oh, we should ask for the percentage. This says the Social Security Administration does not provide live daily count of disability denials as applications are processed through multi-stage process. However, the SSA historically denies about 65 to 68 of all initial disability claims, meaning roughly 1.3 million of the 2 million annual applicants face initial denial.
More than 50%.
Yeah, that's the initial, the reconsideration. Their approval rate is second step and is notoriously low, around 11%. At the administrative law judge step, it doesn't actually say, but that's where I was just denied last. I've been waiting 3 years. The only income I've had is $520 from general assistance a month. I'm blessed to have gotten Section 8 when my son was young. I was a single mom. And recently, so I've been a caregiver. I have to figure out something to do because I'm not getting my disability. The reason that I really needed the disability is because I need back surgery and I can't afford to survive after getting sliced open. If anything goes wrong, I'm not going to be able to walk. And there's a 50% chance of that. There's only a 50% chance of my back getting better with surgery. But I am to the point where I often don't want to live through many days because I am in so much pain and I don't want to do drugs and I don't contribute to the pharmaceutical industry. I just got blessed by one of my spiritual teachers with some money to pay for a class. And because it went through my bank account, I am not even going to get the general assistance for July because I've had any money deposited into my bank account. And it doesn't matter where it goes or what it does, that will disqualify me. So I don't have an income for July. So I'm pounding the pavement looking for a job right now.
Shit Creek without a paddle, essentially.
I don't have a choice, and I don't even have enough money for my kids to pay for my funeral if I just decide to leave.
Well, we should have your wake now, obviously, and celebrate your life for what you've done.
Yeah.
And let me ask you that. What do you feel most proud of or most pleased to remember what happened in your life that up to now that you feel should be remembered or at least maybe learned from or inspired by? Or what inspires you? And you, because you're smiling and something is inspiring you. I don't know what the hell it is.
I think compassion and, you know, sticking it to these people who want to take our livelihoods away. I'm living out of spite right now. And excuse my language, but fuck all these people who want to have us all die. And that is exactly what it feels like. Society is ready to throw away all the broken people. And the passion that drives me is knowing how many broken people have so many amazing qualities. And I really try to go forth with love and kindness and compassion. And I don't like to see what's happening today. So what drives me and what I want to be known for is being the one that will fight for the underdog, just like Katie taught me.
You smile when you remember her.
She's pretty amazing.
Well, you knew her better than I, it sounds like.
We were kind of like family. Yeah.
Yeah, she felt she got a pretty raw deal in the end with her kids. I remember she, I don't know if you ever spoke with her, but she went and got, she got shoveled into a board and care home, or but actually did not give her, either denied her medication or gave her the wrong medication.
So I have, as I've been a caregiver all these years and I'm trying to find out what to do with myself, the money for the class that I got is to start a death doula certificate because, and you know, Katie kind of inspired this because I wanted to get Katie out of that place. And I tried to talk to her kids about it And, you know, most people don't know what to do about death. It's not our, even our kids' fault. You know, they live life. Some of us understand death different. I've been with dozens of people when they died in all different kinds of circumstances. I've been a caregiver, like I said. And so to me, helping people find a peaceful way to go, understanding how to talk to their families about what's happening to them, helping their families figure out what's needed and what needs to be done is really important to me. So that's what I'm turning my focus to in that way.
Is any of this coming back for you? Are you able to, of all the people you've helped, do you see anybody returning to reciprocate? Not trying to remove your smile here.
It's funny that you say that because I heavily believe in karma. I live my life ready to go in that, and that's probably why I'm so excited for the next life, because I know that I've done good in this life. And even when some of the people I've done the best things for now have done me the worst, but it comes back around. And like, I have a spiritual teacher that just turned around and paid for my certificate class to start out of the blue, out of nowhere. I have no money. My car hadn't been registered. And when I finally said, okay, I'm not doing any more with Social Security, I'm done. The next day, that guy just randomly deposited money in my bank account.
Which ruined your disability, right?
Well, it ruined the general assistance. Like, I can't get any more general assistance. But it was enough to register and fix my car and get it smogged finally after more than a year driving around unregistered. And I was able to pay for a class. So I know all of my needs have been met. I might not have fancy things in this world, but I know that my needs are met. And I know that there are so many people who have so much less than I do that I am just grateful for every single thing I have.
I'm running out of Sharpsky questions.
I want to thank you, Robert, for talking to me and having your meetings and doing all you do and sticking by all these people. I think that I first met you and Keith outside of City Hall 30 years ago when we were sleeping out there because they first started making homelessness illegal. I was actually part of the crew, too, that was the bad homeless kids that they decided that you couldn't stay in a parking garage for more than 5 minutes.
That was the Coonerty law, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think that that was my fault and my friends.
Oh, good for you. Yeah, it's of course, now he's running for, what, mayor in November. And, of course, he was able to elevate himself under the Board of Supervisors, or Stupid Vipers, as I still tend to call them from my youth. And he did that when he was mayor, or actually when he was vice mayor, 2006 or 2007. So you were in one of the original sleepouts at City Hall.
Yeah, back in the 90s. I came here in 1995 when Jerry Garcia died. And there were tons of hippies. And back then, I gotta say, there were a ton of us homeless kids. We were kids. We were all runaways and had no direction in life, and we landed here. And all of those, that time, those hippies kept all of the people who did the bad drugs off Pacific Avenue. They kept them out of here because Jerry Garcia had just died of heroin. Those hippies didn't want the heroin addicts down here. When they came through in the 90s, raided my house, I went to jail, busted all the people who just sold weed on Pacific Avenue, which brought tons of tourists that would come here to buy weed from the hippies in Santa Cruz. Like, it was literally a tourist destination for that reason. And when they wiped that off our streets and they let everybody else come down here because they kicked the hippies out, that's when our town went to shit. When I remember, I think it was around maybe 99, early 2000, there was a bunch of heroin that came out on the street and a whole bunch of people died. Do you remember that? A whole bunch.
Here, but yeah, I know that there've been these waves of hard drugs.
Yeah, and then the meth came a few years later and our city went to shit. I feel like I just watched it all happen. And those hippies used to protect us. Those hippies would keep the the meth off the street, keep the heroin off, keep the guys away from the girls, keep us girls safe down here. It was different. Everybody looked out for each other. And we even stayed up at Westcliff Drive a lot. And there was a park ranger, Lighthouse Fields, who was so cool. And we were so like at peace with him. He would bring us coffee and donuts and we would help him clean up the park. It was nothing like it is now. And I think that that has a lot to say about humanity in a whole and Santa Cruz in a whole, because when we had a cash crop and we had people here who lived here because they loved the earth, because they loved the ocean, because they were earth-based people. And then after the prices went up, after the CZU fire happened and we lost 1,000 homes, we lost a lot of our humanitarian population, and it's been replaced by these people who are obsessed with their computers and their robots and this whole other way of living that is taken away from our local culture in a way that breaks my heart.
And we have been speaking with
Sarah.
And Sarah, do you have a website which you're writing your 14th book about this?
I actually just started a Substack called Rogue Sparrow.
Rogue Sparrow.
Yeah.
And how can people get to that particular, or is it public?
Yeah, it's public on Substack.
And what kind of adventures will we find if we go there?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I am writing about a lot of different things right now, and so I figure Substack might be a good place for me to start putting them. But I am very deep in my genealogy right now, and writing about history and the history of how our country came to be and the people who came here and the people who they killed and the people who they married and the families that were created. I come from all of them. I come from all of them. I am a piece
You're
of...
a mongrel is what you are.
I'm such a mutt, and I'm a European-Canadian mutt. Yes, 100%. I'm a third Irish, but my Irish ancestors didn't come here until later on. But my surname, my last name, comes from Jean Pichette, who was the first in the first group of French Canadians that came here, or men from France that went to Canada. And my grandmother, the first one that he married, I actually have her name right here, I can never remember it. She is the grandmother, the basis of the Métis tribe. And the Métis tribe is the first recognized tribe that's half Canadian and half French. So I'm a third of them. And then my colonizers, I have both sides. I have family who was in the witch trials. My aunt was Rebecca Nurse, who was the...
But that really concludes the interview with Sarah Pichette. Here's a little more from David Rovics from the Open Veins of Latin America.
Chavez was elected, like every time he ran. When his socialists took power, that's when the changes began. The opposition started attacking every forward move, but reforms went ahead, the people's welfare improved. A land of such riches that had always gone to so few was reaching places ignored since 1492 in Venezuela. Millions poured into the streets to stop the coup back then. They got the man that they elected back into power again. The Bolivarian Revolution became famous worldwide. Soon other socialist governments swept in a red tide. Between the Cuban doctors and the Venezuelan oil, millions got medical care, millions tilled the soil of Venezuela. Began the sanctions, Obama imposed more, a slow-burning, destabilizing economic war. Following the formula of the Chicago Boys team, used in many places to make economies scream. Oil prices plummeted, foreign holdings locked, invasions being planned, negotiations blocked in Venezuela. Venezuela. Haitian Revolution to Venezuela today, from the Seminoles to Salvador Allende. Look at their ankles, you'll see the chains, imperial vampires, open veins, those who stand up to the business elite, who cannot stand to see the workers in the driver's seat in Venezuela. Venezuela.
Okay, well, today is the 25th of June. It's about, goodness, 10:10, and I'm talking with, what's your name, sir, if you wish to be identified?
Krill.
And Krill, you're down there at Coral Street lollygagging. What's happening?
Yes, well, the sweep is wrapping up. The police are picking up the last of the things on Limekiln.
And how many notices? How many people would you say, is my usual question, were displaced by this latest?
As usual, it's, well, we handed out water bottles yesterday and we got through 120, giving people two each, so about 60 mm-hmm. people.
And you arrived there around 7? And
yes.
Go ahead. Sorry. What kind of sort of run me by events as you recall them unfolding in your mind, if you remember them?
I'm sorry. I'm distracted watching something.
Oh, okay. What are you watching?
Trash guys have moved down to not far from where I'm parked, picking up some things.
And by trash guys, you mean people taking homeless possessions left behind?
Yes, I think we did get a lot of possessions out. So it might just be trash left at this point, but it's hard to tell.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, yeah, I think I see their owner here, and yeah, he seems to have left it intentionally.
Mm-hmm. How many people would you estimate were still there when you arrived, and what time did you arrive?
I arrived about 7:15. Most of the people, if not everyone, was still here. There's still many people busy packing up at 8, which is when the notices are scheduled for. So there's always that stressful moment where the cops could arrive any minute, technically, and people still have many belongings in the street.
Mm-hmm.
In danger of being cordoned off and taken.
And what time did the police actually arrive?
Let's see, it must have been 8:30 to 8:45.
Mm-hmm. So they arrived half an hour to 45 minutes later than the notice posted said that was the deadline?
Yes, which is usual.
Mm-hmm. And how many police would you say arrived?
God, I feel like I've seen 4 to 6 officers at least.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely at least 5.
And how would you describe their behavior and the reaction of the community there to them?
Well, I once again wasn't super up close at the time that they were arriving, so hard to say. They're mostly pretty calm, just telling people to move on, but obviously they're cordoning off the street and taking belongings.
Did you see anyone excluded from the area as a consequence of this cordoning off, and how soon did it happen after they arrived? At what point was the area a cordoned area?
That was pretty much immediately upon their arrival. They didn't kick people out immediately. They didn't give people a few minutes at least to pack up. Hold on. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna have to call you back.
All right, give me a call back. Thank you. All right, so I'm calling. Let me introduce you. I'm sorry, I'm interrupting you. Go ahead.
I'm pretty sleepy and exhausted, but I'll do my best. I might not have too great of information for you.
Oh, yeah. Well, whatever you got is, you know,
yeah.
It's what you got.
All right, sweet.
Okay, well, it's 10 to 11, and Krill, you're calling me back from still at Coral Street?
Yes, just about to leave.
And what is what? Who is still there that you can see? What does the scene look like?
I can't see it right now, but I just saw two police cars, and, well, that's about it, really. They reopened the street. I'm not sure where the officers are, if they're in their cars or not. Mm-hmm. So everything that's left here is pretty clean.
How many people showed up at or shortly after 7 a.m. on Fern and Limekiln, where I assume you met? Is that accurate?
Yes, it would be three people.
And this is about the same number as last week, or a smaller number?
About the same.
And the number of people that were on Coral Street in tents by the, when you arrived, how did it compare with the week before?
I wasn't here the week before, but it seemed same as usual.
How were you greeted by the residents in the tents?
They were mostly busy and focused on packing up. Everybody was still waking up and tired. Housing Matters thankfully had coffee out, so that helped a little bit. They were also distributing a few trash bags, as were the city workers. It's kind of overcast this morning, and I myself was very sleepy, so it was just slow going, but the people who said hi seemed to appreciate us being there. Mm-hmm.
Any people from your mutual aid group, were they new, or were they all pretty much old, experienced hands?
It was a very small group today, and I guess one of them was kind of new. Yes.
Okay. He was what? I'm sorry.
One of them was kind of new.
Yep. Gotcha. Did anybody do any photographing or videoing or audioing?
Actually, yes. I myself did some this time. During the winding down moments of the cops clearing Coral Street, I saw way down the street from Limekiln a bicycle being thrown into a truck. I thought we'd cleared out all the valuable belongings, but I wanted to run over there and ask them if they were going to issue receipts for the bike, what they were doing with it, where it was being taken. Mm-hmm. Let them know that they're filing 63680 by not issuing receipts. And that was an interesting experience for me. I mostly got dismissive or no answers from the police as well as the city workers.
How far away were you initially from this incident when you first noticed it?
It was almost at the other end of Coral by Housing Matters, where I was on Limekiln. Mm-hmm. It was kind of far, but I happened to be standing there looking down the street at that moment.
And what was your reaction?
I was surprised to see they found a bike somewhere that we'd overlooked, I guess. And I just thought we need to start holding them accountable for this kind of stuff. So I went over to see what I could do and what I could capture on the video.
Did you run? Yeah. Did you walk?
Especially in case. We could find the owner and help him file a complaint having that evidence. I ran over. I went around the block.
That was quite a long way to go.
Still
right?
Cordoned off. Yeah, well, they were still there by the time I got there. So.
And describe the scene when you arrived there.
I saw a security guard walking down the parking lot. I was walking through. He passed me. I saw several police officers and several city workers and some Housing Matters staff as well. Kind of standing around in that section of the cordon near that section of the cordon where you're allowed to be on the street in order to access Housing Matters. So that's where I went. I confronted the police, started recording.
Mm-hmm. How many police seem to be involved in this episode?
Definitely at least three.
And
I think some others were at the other end of the street.
Mm-hmm. And what were they doing?
They were just walking away to get in their cars and move on and collect more trash, I guess. So they seem to be coordinating where to take the trash vehicle.
And how many other individuals were within a 20-foot radius?
Between everybody I mentioned, let's see. It might have been upwards of 8 people.
Was there any dialogue happening while you arrived?
Yeah, I just heard the city workers coordinating where to take the truck. I think Housing Mayor's employees were talking to somebody. I don't know about what. I didn't hear.
Where were they telling, who was telling who to take the truck, and where did they tell them to go?
That wasn't exactly clear. All I heard was, do you want this over by 300?
Hmm. And did you see the owner of the bike, or anybody who claimed custody of the bike, or anyone who was concerned about the removal of the bike?
Just myself.
And were there, was this an area completely vacated of prior residents there, or were there still people there?
I think it was vacated, or the section of cordon, like, you were allowed to stand there, but I don't think anybody was still there at that time.
And about what time was it? Do you remember?
What time? I probably have a cord on my phone, but it was during the winding down of the Coral Street section of the sweep, which probably between 9 and 9:30.
How many people were you able to help yourself, number one? Yeah. That's my first question.
I think we helped. We did a lot of working together, so we helped probably 5 or 6 people and groups.
Did do you suggest, or did anyone ask for, and did anyone volunteer their contact information?
I didn't ask for that, but one of our volunteers was actually handing out forms for complaining about damages due to the lost property
mm-hmm.
with the city, and that was quite popular. It ran out quickly because didn't bring enough of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let me know next week, and I'll try to make some copies if you're having trouble copying them.
We just didn't expect such a reception to them.
So it was a different reception than prior weeks?
Oh, no. We've got a number of possible avenues here because there's the complaints with the city and the small claims court, and then there's complaints with the police department to pursue, as well as possibly, what are they called, the temporary restraining orders. So we've kind of got a lot of ideas floating around, and some people are working on them. It's still very new to us, however, and we've just started discussing them with the residents of Coral Street as well, which the ideas are quite popular there. Yeah.
Any signs of the news media of any one kind or another? Yeah.
Not that I could identify, no.
Did a train ever come through?
No, I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. And you've mentioned in the past and prior sweeps that people tend to take their property off the Coral Street area and put it nearby. But then there can be a follow-up operation by police. Did you see any of that happening today?
I did see a bit of that, I saw police talking to people who had their belongings on, by the sidewalk nearby, telling them that they can't have it there, basically. So we helped them move further away.
Did the anyone raise the issue, which you may remember, either you or Adrian or somebody else at the Huff meeting raised, which is the wording of the notice given and posted on the tents that cites 6.36 and perhaps 647E, I don't know, as the basis for removing these tents. That what they're doing is they're moving an encampment, but not specifying the location or dimensions of the what's included in the encampment. So the person does not have advance notice as to what they are actually being required to move. Did anybody raise that issue with the police?
Not to my knowledge, possibly. I don't know. I haven't caught up with Adrian, what he's been doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it would necessarily be effective. I suspect it wouldn't. But it would be interesting to know if people are raising it.
Judging by the police responses to when I confronted them, they're not really interested in the minutiae of the law. At least not, you know, to where it affects them legally.
Did you ever hear or did you hear from either a police officer, a tow truck employee, a housing matters functionary, or a fellow activist, any indication that the police or anyone working with them were offering alternate places for people to go?
That did not even come up as a thought. I wasn't privy to all the discussions going on around us, so I couldn't tell you.
Did the people in the main who were leaving appear to be largely the same group that was there the week before?
What was the question, sorry?
In other words, the people that you noticed that were trying to move their property out.
Yes.
Were they the same as the week before?
A lot of familiar faces, absolutely.
And were there many new faces?
I don't think so, no.
And did you notice an absence of people from the week before?
I did not.
Okay.
It seemed roughly the same amount.
Go ahead.
So to my impression, it almost seemed like there was more people back than I remember at some point. So I think people are definitely pretty consistently coming back.
What was the mood among people as this was happening?
Probably stress. People stress and focus on packing their things.
Did anyone attempt to conduct normal business with Housing Matters during this incident, either to, I don't know, seek employment, walk into the complex, try to use the bathroom, go in or out from Housing Matters, and so forth?
A lot of our efforts were focused on the bigger tents on the other end of the street from Housing Matters, so I wasn't really around there, but there's always some activity there. I'm sure people...
"25 years was what the judge said. Then he banged his gavel and shook his head. You've done wrong, you broke our trust. Now we caught you and this is a bust. Now you'll spend these decades behind bars of steel. Thought you could play with us, but this is for real. You gave away secrets to the enemy. Now you'll live in prison in the land of the free. But here beneath this Cuban sun, I'd just like to thank you for all you've done. Today I'm torn apart. Fernandez, you are a spy after my own heart. I obeyed my conscience instead of the law. So you set up your secret trial. You took no money for your work. So says you declassified the file. of the assassins from the U.S. Just what other good deeds you did, they may never tell us. But here beneath this Cuban sun, I'd just like to thank you for all you've done. Today I'm torn apart. You are a spy after my own heart. I up in the ranks of the DOD. You served the common good. You should. Of all the great people I've met, there are few that I'd call greater than one woman who obeyed a higher law, the judge called a traitor. But here beneath this Cuban sun, I'd just like to thank you for all. I'm a spy after my own heart.
How does this make you feel about coming back again for any more of this, which I imagine is rather tiring and maybe depressing work? I don't know.
It is a bit rough. I haven't fully processed everything. I'm still winding down from kind of confronting the police. So, and I'm pretty exhausted from not sleeping enough. Honestly, the getting up early is probably the hardest on me personally. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I'm always thinking about how to manage my stress levels and make sure it's sustainable or decide what would be a better approach. That's part of why we're exploring these other avenues, because we don't want to go through the same cycle over and over. If there might be a way to stop it.
Yep. did you have any conversations with any of the people who you were helping or who were nearby and that you felt were educational for you, taught you something new that you might want to comment on?
There wasn't a whole lot of time for conversations. And some people are pretty talkative, and I want to be careful about what is and isn't a rumor. So I try to make sure anything of note is like solid information before I reshare it with anybody.
Mm-hmm. Well, have I missed anything that you might want to point out?
Let's see. Probably not. It's kind of a usual sleep, but we're just kind of testing the waters of what else we can do, I suppose.
You were at much of the Santa Cruz Homeless Union meeting yesterday. I came to part of it, as you know, and left to interview this Sarah person. I take it she didn't show up.
No, I didn't see her.
Did you learn much or get any tips from the Santa Cruz Homeless Union meeting?
I was focused on the shower project mostly, which looked very promising to me.
That's a large tent, for those who can't visualize it, that can be used to do what's called a sun shower, where the sun heats up the water, or you get your water from somewhere else, and you do it in the midst of a large tent, which gives some privacy and some, you know, kind of stops the water from dispersing too widely, and people can take a kind of a sort of shower there. That's, I think it was used some years ago with Food Not Bombs when they were parked at the post office area in downtown Santa Cruz. It hasn't been used for a while.
I was excited to see somebody working on that. Like, that's what we need more of, his services down there, and just like the help that, you know, all the government funding should be going to helping unhoused people, and yet here we are paying out of pocket for these, you know, very basic things.
Yep. Now, in the past, you mentioned one of the concerns has been, and you've actually, you and Adrian have raised this issue at the Huff meeting, is the lack of bathroom and hand washing access in the most primitive way that was provided to some extent, although not adequately, to folks outside during the COVID crisis and to some extent thereafter, but and was also available up until about April 1st of this year, when Funding Matters shut down its operation in order to, it's not clear where the money actually was specifically directed, but they are definitely, were spending more on housing and expansion of their personnel. And it seemed to me, again, I don't have the public records, and nor have I, if I had them, would I necessarily have looked at them for this current fiscal year or what the more most recent stuff. But I guess, how much of an issue is the bathroom issue for you still? And or how much is it an issue for your group? Or for that matter, for the people who are living there?
Well, I've been mainly thinking as a side project on what we could do about that. And it's quite a logistical challenge. We need more volunteers, people thinking on it and working on it and operating bucket toilets, for instance. I'm sure it's still quite a big issue. I haven't had any discussions with residents about that, just because I'm trying to focus on, I've already discussed it with them in the past. I understand it's an ongoing problem. So, lots of other things to worry about, and then for now I'm trying to do something, and what I'm able to do right now is just show up on sweep mornings and help people move things.
Dig it. But did you notice a deterioration in sanitation in an obvious way, like smells in the air, piles of poop on the street, urine soaked stuff, anything like that?
The street's been surprisingly clean. When I talked to people about it before, they mentioned one instance of poop on the street, and that was taken as kind of unusual and offensive. Like, there's a general ethos that nobody should be doing that. So people are finding ways to keep relatively clean. Did see a little bit of dog poop on the street today. I've smelled things walking around the vicinity of Coral Street. Obviously, people have to find somewhere to go, and not everybody can make it there. But I've been thinking about making a point to city council that, you know, if they didn't have a bathroom, every single one of them would pull down their pants and crouch in the bush.
Mm-hmm. So. Yep. You also mentioned that you and Adrian, or perhaps one of the other of you, were there the day before on Coral Street, distributing literature or getting in touch or just surveying the scene or whatever you were doing. What did you observe then? That was the day before the police arrived, and that had already been, well, many weeks without toilet facilities. But also, I guess the previous week there had been a sweep, so there was presumably washing of the ground. I should ask you that. Are they fire hosing the ground to dispose of the, you know, supposedly clean up?
They're not fire hosing the ground. They seem to be sweeping well with brooms.
Did it seem like it was necessary in the sense that you see yesterday, did you see anything that offended your nose or that you think was, were the residents saying, gee, I sure wish they'd come up and clean here. I'm looking forward to the sweep tomorrow, yada, yada, yada.
Well, weirdly enough, the trash pickups, like everybody needs trash pickup, and that's always appreciated because residents do want to keep their area clean. So I'm sure some people are leaving trash specifically because it's getting picked up and they want it gone. But I didn't notice anything particularly offensive. No, those very normal people's belongings out and about, and there's of course always issues with trash, and rats are a problem as well. Nobody likes them.
Did you see any today?
I think I might have actually. Yes, it was behind a fence. In one of the lots near Coral Street.
Do you see any non-residents dumping trash there?
I don't think so. I'm not sure why they would.
That has been an accusation made for different places that in the you know, some people perhaps, you know, understandably bemoan the despoiling of the Poganip and in campsites where people have not been tidy campers, either through necessity or through negligence. But it's also been pointed out or claimed that ordinary housed residents can dump their trash in the Poganip in order to avoid, I don't know, costs at the dump site or something. I've never studied this or, you know, gotten a lot of accounts that would make me say something I could say more reliably about it, but hear anything about that? Have any thoughts on that?
I haven't personally heard about that. I'm not aware of it, but I don't know. I wouldn't put it past certain people in this town doing that sort of thing. Some people very much beat the homeless and go out their way to make them look bad.
Right, well, I don't know if it, I mean, I was thinking it was done merely as a convenience for some housed people.
Yeah, and I believe that as well. Like,
I mean, here's this pile of trash.
Everybody has trash, and the trash disposal isn't free. Maybe some people can't even afford it.
Well, also, I mean, you see a trash pile of trash by the road, and you think, oh, well, might as well dump my trash here. I mean, this is going to be picked up somewhere, and so you go dump your trash, you know. I mean, I'm not saying even people who are malicious or even terribly negligent, I mean, they assume that's going to be helped, you know, so, or cleaned up. Well, go ahead.
In an ideal world, I think the city should offer trash services to everyone because it's everyone's problem.
Dig it. So, or perhaps I should say valid. You're very patient, Krill. I feel like perhaps you're probably too patient. You'd rather be, sleeping. So, is there anything more you want to say before you're released from, as they say, captivity again?
That's all I got for now, but I'm looking forward to the Huff meeting.
All right. Well, listen, much appreciated the Huff meeting. I was impressed with your and Adrian's account so much so that I played it on, I think I mentioned to you maybe, I played it on the net the first 20 minutes of the show. And I'm also thinking sorry?
That's good to hear.
Yeah, it was good to listen to, too, for sure. I mean, it was interesting. I didn't catch a lot of it the first time through. I was sort of busy, I don't know, bemoaning the fact that I didn't have my computer or trying to take notes. And so when I listened to it a second time, which I don't usually do, it was vibrant. It was a lot of specifics were presented. It was people that I'd been annoyed who had interrupted. Actually, I felt good that they had said what they had said, so that was worth doing. And in fact, I'm thinking of, I think I may have mentioned to you in a, I think I said it to Adrian's voicemail and yours too. I'm looking to set up an archive of Huff meetings.
Yes.
And did I get your opinion on that? I don't know if I did. I can't get it at the meeting.
We spoke on the phone about it a little bit.
Ah, gotcha. Okay. Remind me of what your opinion was.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. I don't know. I don't listen. I have a really hard time listening to recordings and stuff, so I probably personally wouldn't use it.
Somebody might.
Yeah, it's good to have things on record and organized for reference.
Dig it. Well, I'm good if there's nothing more you've got.
Nothing to say.
I will see you.
Hey, Adrian, you want to add anything?
All cops are bastards.
Now. It's the barrel that spoils the apples. Keep that in mind.
Fair enough.
Indeed.
Hey, good to hear from you, Robert. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thanks for being there and calling back.
Mm-hmm.
Take care of you two. See you, hopefully, if you show up at the meeting.
See you then.
I won't be there, but you will.
Oh, okay. Then
we'll
preserve a copy of it for you.
All right. Sounds good.
Hey, take care, man.
You too.
All right. Bye-bye.
This be Arizona 1917, the worst kind of company town anybody's ever seen. Phelps Dodge controlled everything there. They owned everything in Bisbee, everything. It was a town of copper miners, that's what people did. Worked beneath the ground, lived in the skids, risking their lives for just enough to survive. It didn't take long when the Wobblies arrived. They went on strike, all the miners down below, and they were shipped away to New Mexico. Percent of the miners had joined in, Mexicans and Anglos, the Croatians and the Finns. Then the dirty sheriff working with the company put them in cattle cars that went 500 miles from Bisbee. They went on strike, all the miners down below, and they were shipped away to New Mexico. Never faced any consequences for this obvious disgrace. To deport 1,000 people beneath the summer heat, they broke the union in Bisbee, it just couldn't compete. They went on strike, all the miners down below, and they were shipped away to New Mexico. They went on strike, all the miners down below, and they were shipped away.
Okay, well, it's about 25 to 5 on the 18th of June, 2026, and I'm talking with...
My goodness, tomorrow's my birthday.
Oh, no.
So...
Who is this?
My real name?
Don't talk with your mouth full for him. No.
Gibbous.
We'll call you Gibbous.
Yes.
And you say you visited the police station once on an inspection tour?
Yeah, I went up there to see if the bathrooms were open, use the restroom, because in Scott's Valley, you can't, like, once something shuts down, you can't, there's nowhere to go. So you go to the police station. The bathrooms are still open. However, the homeless area that they actually have where you're supposed to be able to sleep at was cordoned off, like a fence all the way around it. And I said, you know what, I'm going to lie down. And they said, no, you can't do that. And I said, look, I'm going to lay down. They said, no, you can't do that.
What time of day or night was it?
This was about 9:30.
Morning, evening?
Evening.
It was dark.
Yeah. And so I lay down anyway and fall asleep. And they woke up me in the morning with, hey, you got to get out of here. Why? Because we're having events. We're going to have events.
An anti-homeless event?
Apparently, it's anti-homeless events. So I couldn't figure out why they were doing that, because they were the ones that told me to go up there in the first place.
How long ago was this?
This was day before yesterday.
And have you been back to use the bathroom or go to sleep?
No, I'm going to. What I'm going to do is I'm going to. Now, this is non-literal. However, this is what a man feels like. Pee in a bag and throw it on the doors.
Leave your smell.
Yeah. How a man would never do something like that. It is nice that the bathrooms are still open. And they got that for having an area for the homeless to stay. So they got the money for the bathrooms to stay open for having an area for the homeless to stay. And now there's no area for a homeless to stay. I don't think I ever have to go up there and use a bathroom again.
You could always go to the mayor and then use the bathroom in his place.
Ah, well, let's not talk about Scotts Valley City Council or the mayor, because I had a slogan that I ran off of that I was just doing here in Scotts Valley about hope and unity. It was about hope and unity, and one of the Scotts Valley City Council members, a girl, she asked me, she said, can I use that slogan? And I said, sure, if you live to it. And she did. She got elected and didn't live up to it at all. Nowhere near came.
What was the slogan?
Oh, gosh darn. It was,
what was the substance of the slogan? The
substance of the slogan was that we should all be united. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you for the update there. Gibbs, anything you want to add?
No.
In a word.
Yeah.
And we've been talking with?
Gibbous.
Thank you, Gibbous.
I also have other, I should say, like, for the, I don't mind, actually, for this particular genre, like, Robert I've known for 30-something years, and I don't mind, you know, because my name is, this is what my name means, my real name means, he who is planted by the waters and comes with love of the sea.
Thank you, Gibbous.
All right, very good.
To clarify that a little bit, Gibbs is a regular up in Scotts Valley, and I ran into him before and interviewed him, where he told me, and I think I played this recently, that the Scotts Valley Police Department has opened up an area that it says it will allow homeless people to sleep in and presumably also to use the restroom. And so this update was designed to clarify that, A, they aren't letting people sleep there anymore, and B, apparently there's a restroom problem as well. Similar to Santa Cruz, it's an anti-homeless form of bigotry, of a rather vicious and really counterproductive sort, not just for homeless folks, but for the public health of the community as well. Here's a further update that, a series of contacts I had at Food Not Bombs, which gives its usual Saturday and Sunday meals. And I ran into the Saturday one yesterday, if you're listening to this on the 28th.
So today is the 27th of June. I'm here at the Hunap Bombs meal at about 2. I'm losing all my flyers. And I'm talking with Kirill, who's returning from a meal at Food Not Bombs, heading off to, who knows, maybe doing laundry or there's some other mischief. What's up?
Yeah, that would be pretty much it. It's laundry day.
And you may, I guess I heard, you know, some concern about, although we have no verification yet, a question of wonder as to, or query as to, where the bikes are going that police are occasionally confiscating or seem to be confiscating around town. And that happens occasionally, or at least it's happened once on Coral Street, right?
Yes, I don't know of other instances, but the last Thursday on Coral Street, the police were seen, well, with the city workers, they were seen throwing bikes into a truck. I tried to run up to them and video and ask what they were doing with the bikes, and I got no response at all. Silence. So
silence is golden.
I suppose so, but it was kind of unusual. I progressed to asking simpler questions like, "What's your job here?" Asking the city workers, like, "What are you doing here? Why are you here?" And they refused to speak to me, which was a little strange. I thought it'd be a pretty straightforward interaction that they're sweeping the bikes as part of the encampment removal and taking them to the dump, but the response was unexpectedly cagey.
Now, you've actually been going to the Coral Street area for the last 3 or 4 weeks, more or less.
Yes.
And, I mean, of course, obviously, if they're doing something that is either illegal or gives them bad publicity, one can understand they might be reluctant to talk about it in detail.
That's the only thing I can imagine. I don't know, maybe they're just really, really scared of phones, and I was holding a phone in their face.
Because I think at least one of your number has found that by approaching them with a phone and speaking about, we've got you on video, where are you taking that bike, where's the receipt, the individual returned, the cop returned, or the city worker returned, and returned the bike to where it was prior to when he picked it up.
Yes, that was the week before last Thursday, and that's kind of what I expected to happen when I confronted them about it. So, a little bit different response this time. I don't know, it's hard to say what's going on. They might be... I can only imagine they have some kind of agenda in mind, and they've been responding to our, you know, asking them questions by changing their strategy. I don't know. It's hard to say what's going on, and that's the reason this is so strange, because it's so hard to say what's going on. It should be a straightforward encampment removal according to the law.
Indeed. How is the follow-up going on the Coral Street documenting and mutual aid? Are you able to... you must be kind of, you're trying to maintain survival situation because you do live outside, right?
Yes. I'm, yeah, life is busy. So I don't always get to do everything I want to do, and we're still low on volunteers. I would love help with investigating all these sorts of things and side projects that we want to do. So right now I'm just looking into how I can responsibly use the footage I gathered. I'd love to show it to everybody I can, but I want to make sure I'm doing so.
Well, you did show some of that footage at the Huff meeting, and it was you met with a positive reception, but no $50 donations.
We got a donation, actually.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
You will be, of course, splitting it with me. I would like at least 90%.
Oh, yeah, we'll look into that. We'll...
I see. My surcharge will come later, I guess.
Absolutely, and you deserve to be paid for your time and effort.
As we all, be nice if we all were. Anything coming up in the next week or two that you see that you want to, well, you mentioned you're looking for volunteers to help you every I guess, Thursday morning when you anticipate another sweep? Has there been a new posting on the tents at Coral Street?
Not yet. Usually either Monday or Tuesday they put out the notices, so that's when we expect to find out.
Oh, so that's 3 or 4 days in advance, 72 hours or something like that. If people want to get in touch with your group, how should they proceed?
Oh, that's a great question.
I mean, I can say people can call the Huff line, and I can then call you. That could be a possibility.
Yes. For now, let's do that, because Adrian's been doing most of the recruiting, and we've been meeting people in person, signing them up directly to the Signal chat. So I don't have a link established for that yet, which is, you know, another part of another reason why we need volunteers.
Laundry first, Signal chat later.
Exactly. There's a lot of group organizational stuff to do as well. So
sleeping, eating, minor things like that.
Yep.
Anything you want to add?
I guess that's it for now. That's just my quick update. Yeah, it's an ongoing. It's an interesting. Like, I don't know. I was not expecting quite that level of reluctance to speak on simple questions. So that's just been on my mind ever since last Thursday.
I would say be prepared to be stonewalled, if not abused, for asking the obvious, because the obvious is not something that is pretty.
I suppose so.
At least that's how I view it, because cynic that I am, that's what I've seen over the years. You don't have to be cynical, you just have to report what you see, I think. And we've been talking with...
This is Kirill, and I'm part of a little volunteer group that does sweep support on Coral Street on most Thursdays.
That'll be 7 a.m. in the morning, usually?
Yes. If you want to... We do post announcements of when sweeps are confirmed in our Signal chat, so if you want to contact Huff to figure out how to get there, we'll have that up, and then you can show up and help us help people move their things, keep them out of the way of the cops. Last week, there was a shopping cart left by a fence that the police said couldn't be there anymore, and we couldn't find the owner of it. So we...
Take custody of it.
We took custody of the belongings. The police said we have to leave the cart because it's store property. But we did take the belongings and came back later that day to return them. And
the police had helpfully removed the belongings?
They removed the shopping cart, which is after we took the belongings out of it.
But the belongings were still there.
We took them out and put them in one of our vehicles and returned later that day when the police were gone, to track down the owner, which we did, and they were extremely grateful for, you know, the few bags full of things that we saved for them, because, you know, that's it's hard. Like, a few things can mean a lot to a person in that situation, and especially since things get stolen all the time as well, you know, and lost and stolen by the police as well. So, like, everybody's trying to build their life, everybody's trying to survive, and they need to be able to do so. So I'm glad we were able to save them some things from the police's hands that day.
I think others were glad too, correct? Anyway, the number to call if you're interested in helping him is the Huff line, until we get a better number, 423-HUFF if you have an old landline, or 423-4833, which is the same thing. And again, 831-423-4833. Thank you, Crew.
You're welcome.
All right. Okay, we're talking to a man who is frequently seen at these Food Not Bombs gatherings. What do you call yourself today?
Master of Palaver.
Palaver Master.
There you go.
Or PM, as we might call you.
Right.
You say you have some advice for folks who are interested in assisting folks with garments when they find them abandoned, or perhaps they've abandoned them themselves.
There people you go. Out. And what happens is our community sometimes has an inability to tote things around when they get rained on and soggy, or when it gets too hot and heavy for some good material clothes. And I spot them on the street corners sometimes or in the bushes. And it does take a washer. Even better, or and you could use a dryer too for them. But if we could repurpose them and redistribute, it'd be a real form of community, which our government agencies don't seem to appreciate. Storage is denied people without housing. Laundry is denied.
Water, food.
Showers are very scarce. And those basic needs, I think that nobody gets off the hook in recognizing that we can do better. That's all. So I'm inviting. Participate. It's very easy. Spare clothes. People my age are dying left and right with closets full of clothes.
You could die, you know, and deal with this whole issue.
It's my off-ramp, you might say.
Yes.
But in any event, while I'm here, you know, I know that people are doing good work, as Robert Norse does.
Definitely.
In different ways, though. Sometimes in
hardly up to
ways.
My level, of course.
No, but in any event, we all got our thing. But keep that in mind. That's one contribution to better health and dignity when we find material clothes in our neighborhoods or on the streets. Don't just junk it. Check it out. See if it can't be repurposed, recleaned, and redistributed.
And where should they take this material?
Right here, man. Food, not bombs. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Okay.
12 to 3.
You got it, basically. 12 to 3, right. And then Bread and Roses. Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, they have food and good meals from 10 to 12.
Sunday?
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
I'd heard of Tuesday through Thursday, but I guess Sunday is new.
Sunday is a professor from Santa Clara University, usually brings some students, well, at least young people, with him. And they're very generous, very kindly. They are on the levee, and they distribute clothes, but hot meals and coffee. Equally importantly.
And that would be at the Dragon's Head Bridge, pedestrian bridge?
There you go, or you could say for a lot of our neighbors right across the street from Trader Joe's. You got to dodge the buses, but it's well worth it. Good community. It doesn't exclude people without housing.
Just don't try to circulate a petition or they'll have you driven off the property. Trader Joe's.
Oh, no. That I only give it as a keystone for people that do their shopping there.
Oh, I like their food, and I do my shopping there on occasion, but
okay.
They have their, shall we say, problems.
Oh, there you go.
Yes.
Unlike ourselves, but yeah, it's important to recognize, read the room. It was good advice I got long ago. Read the room. Know the limitations of who you're dealing with. Shut up and listen to Robert Norse once in a while.
Always listen.
That's words of wisdom.
Listen to me. I'm the man. I mean, let's face it.
Well, so far, but I haven't seen evidence. The man. Oh, okay. A man.
One of them, for sure.
Okay.
And again, we've been talking with PM.
Ramblin' Gambler.
This man has many names.
Yeah,
thank you, Ramblin' Gambler. And
okay.
Take care.
Okay, thanks, Robert.
Yeah.
So right now what we're discussing is what the police auditor thinks we should bring to the police auditor. Right? That's what we're doing?
Now you're hearing part of a Santa Cruz homeless union meeting. The meeting is held every Wednesday from 3:30 to 5 at the Red Church. And the discussion here is a couple of activists attended the last city council meeting, which I call the shitty council. And one of the things that happened was a group which is paid by the city to monitor the police department for ill deeds and inappropriate stuff, specifically, I don't know, complaints, bad policies, violations of basic rights, things of that sort. which I guess I have not been following them the last 6 years with any care, or really pretty much at all, but they've been putting out annual reports. Although I think more recently in the last few years, there's been a new group has been following it from out of town. And we had one council, one activist who actually attended the meeting of the city council on Tuesday. And here you'll hear, you're going to hear Keith introducing him. And he begins to report.
I am curious. I have a meeting agreed on but not scheduled for later this week with the independent police auditor to discuss the police's behavior specifically related to unhoused people. And I wanted to input on like what people think I should bring up, if there's any specific stories that would be good to bring up, or anyone who might want to come with, if I ask them if guests are okay.
When you showed up at the meeting?
I did. I went to the shitty council meeting, and the police auditors were showing their report, and I went up and I was speaking on the police, and I turned around and I mentioned to one of the police auditors, I was like, if you'd like to set up a meeting, I'd love that. Fred Keeley got really mad at me for that. Keeley was like, don't address them, you only get to address the council. But anyways, afterwards, the police auditor ended up coming up to me and being like, yeah, let's set up a meeting.
What was his name,
dude? Her name, it was Samara or Samara. I forgot how she pronounced it. But it's S-A-M-A-R-A, I think.
Is there more than one? Is there a variety of people on this?
There were two. There was her and then a guy named Michael. But Michael didn't approach me. It was just her.
I think Michael's the one that we should generally have interacted with over the years. That's the same Michael. He's not been very successful.
The one that pulled down the hump meeting, he was there. I don't remember his name. The one on the motorcycle but said I don't do anything.
I don't remember.
Interesting.
I mean,
but you know,
as far as I know,
very verbal.
No one on the police review board or the police auditors has ever come to our meeting.
Well, no, I listened, but Nicholas Whitehead was there too.
Well, this is so.
So anyway, I think basically it's what we would want to interact with them about relative to homeless is, of course, the sweeps on Coral and Harvey West. That's a big issue. And and the taking of the belongings, which is, you know, and the fact that there's no, and that the alleged rule, which is the things get tagged and put down at the police station, and you can go there Tuesdays on Washington Street or Thursdays, whatever their trip is now, is completely ineffective because you go there and they never give you anything.
After 30 days, it's gone and somebody's playing.
Yeah, and they actually don't take it there, and they don't really tag it, and they don't, and they just really throw it away. They don't even get there. But what little does get there, they just look in the pile and they hand you something, whether it was yours or not. My experience, but you have to sit there. Yeah, take as much as you want. You have to sit there, like, you know, for 3 hours until then you look in, and then you go, oh, that's mine over there, even if it isn't yours, and then they give it to you.
Have you ever actually heard of people getting anything back from there?
The only person I've ever met that ever got anything back was Dreamcatcher. But it was easy because it was his picture, so you could easily tell it was his. Nobody else had his pictures. But otherwise, nobody got anything that I've ever known that was actually their belongings. People get belongings, but it's not necessarily their belongings.
Have you ever tried to get anything back?
Oh, I never did, no. I should have gotten my bullhorn back, but I forgot.
The last time we tried it was a year ago. Tough people went down there with Athena, when she was monitoring I guess stuff taken in the Hobonet.
Uh-huh.
And they sewed Puff on it, and so it was all labeled and so forth. Some of it was supposedly
And they kept running them around to different people. You talk to one police officer, oh, so-and-so is in charge. You have to go
yeah, that's what happens.
Her. Oh, no, we don't cover that anymore. No, go back. They have it over there. It was kind of fun for them, I guess, or maybe not. Maybe it's just annoying.
Yeah, I was reading the 2025 report from the police auditor, and there was a paragraph, let's see. In another case, a concerned community member contacted SCPD after a sweep of an encampment area, alleging that officers had improperly disposed of individuals' belongings. Here, SCPD reviewed all body-worn camera footage of the incident to determine if any of the involved officers' actions violated department policy or the law. When none was identified, and we concur, command staff classified the case as informational. In an abundance of caution, PSU forwarded the incident to its homeless response team for further evaluation to ensure that the actions were aligned with community expectations.
So I haven't looked over the procedure and the processes or the reports that these police auditors give in a kind of, I guess, an annual report. But of course, the real issue is whether they heard witnesses, whether they actually interviewed the people, whether they viewed the video, whether they independently oversaw the police department and to consider the complaint against that department. And it's not, you know, it's, and I'm glad that people are raising these questions because it's, there needs to be, of course, probably a people's mechanism for doing this. I noticed the government mechanism didn't work well when we had a police review board in Santa Cruz because the city council appointed the members of the board, and the city council and the members of the board that they appointed seemed to be very concerned with not stepping on the toes of the police, wanted to work with them. It's kind of, it seemed like the relationship between the district attorney and the sheriffs or something. And then when the board actually began to acquire independence under Chair Mark Halfmoon in 2002 of a certain kind and talked about using their real powers because they had powers but didn't use them to subpoena witnesses and testimony and police officers, the city council disbanded the board and turned it over to an independent so-called auditor. A guy called Bob Aronson, who was originally the attorney who was advising the police review board, but he took half the grant that the board was given and turned out reports that weren't given much wide circulation. I think I don't even remember those particular reports, but I'm glad that someone is picking up the ball here again, because the ball has to be picked up. The trouble is there's so many balls to pick up that it's a tiring task and a formidable one. But let's take another musical break.
Flying in with high tech, overwhelming force. The empire never fights fair, of course. It runs the world in order to do what the billionaires tell them to. With excuses that are patently meaningless, they're killing for corporate interests. And because they have nuclear weapons, and the ones they attack haven't got them there. Invading a sovereign nation's soil in another war for oil. They say that Don is unhinged because he's saying what the real reason was. Not drugs or freedom or democracy, but the interest of U.S. companies. It's the oldest imperial tradition, wiping out or taking over all the competition. Unless you're dumb enough to believe the head of state again, who says he'll make Venezuela great again by invading a sovereign nation's soil in another war for oil. They overthrew Iranian democracy way back in 1953. Decades The empire struck back to keep all their oil in Iraq. They even overthrew Australia, Chile, Haiti, Guatemala, Cuba, the DR, and the Congo. Yeah, where did Lumumba go? Invading a sovereign nation soil in another war for oil. It's a long North American tradition. Crimes of imperial sedition, justified by Democratic senators, Woodrow Wilson's very progenitors. If you dare to resist the eagle's claw, you can forget all about international law, because the conventions mean as little to them as they do to the European Union. Invading a sovereign nation's soil in another war for oil.
And that is pretty much it for this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Though I continue to find that the Huff meetings, and even the Santa Cruz Homeless Union meetings, and those as well for sure, actually, do provide, for me, points of insight. And I think for folks just coming in, even more so, perhaps. News media have been showing up at both these meetings. Santa Cruz local person showed up at a couple of meetings of the Santa Cruz Homeless Union. City and Hill Press showed up at the Homeless Union. The Lookout Santa Cruz showed up at the Huff meeting. I gave her a little bit of a hard time, the reporter, Kelly. I was glad she came and she was interested. She kept talking about, I suggested if she really wanted to see what was going on with the sweeps, although there was a great presentation made at the last Huff meeting by Krill, who had videoed the police refusing to answer reasonable questions. Very well videoed, audible, and so forth. And he even risked, I don't know if he risked being within the sacred confines of the roped-off areas that the police set up. I think Adrian is accused of doing that, and he got arrested for it. And I don't know if their charges so far have not appeared in court, and maybe it was simply a tactic of the police to just terrorize away documenting people who are documenting what they're doing so they can continue doing it. And at the last Huff meeting, we decided to set up a separate sort of archive for Huff meeting audios, so people who don't get to the meeting can hear them. People who did get to the meeting can review them more thoroughly. Unfortunately, this last Huff meeting disappeared. I don't know where it went. I thought I'd found it at the last moment. I thought I'd transferred it, but it hadn't been transferred. I'm going to have to take additional safeguards in the next upcoming Bathrop Spears Broadsides shows when I choose to play. Well, I'm going to try to regularly archive these meetings, and that just going to make sure that they are there to be archived. So my apologies to folks who are hoping to hear more recent Huff stuff, and instead they're getting a few minor clips from both Huff and the Santa Cruz Homeless Union. Also, I had a really full day the Saturday that where I was preparing the show, and I was pretty exhausted. I am pretty exhausted. For me, it's the wee hours of Sunday, and I've got to get some sleep, and that tends to impair my judgment on these issues somewhat. So my apologies. We'll see if we can do better in the future. Actually, as a last harumph, so to speak, or perhaps a kind of a compensatory prize for those who are waiting for the Huff meeting to be put onto the Huff website so they could hear it in case they wanted to review it, and it's not going to be done because it no longer exists except in people's memories. Here's a part of the meeting before, a week before, on the, I guess it was the 18th of June. And I played some of it at an earlier show, which you can find by going to the June 21st show online on the Huff website. And here's a little bit more of it, just sort of to whet your appetite for next Sunday in the event that I'm less clumsy and less sleepy in dealing with the files and maybe more cautious, which I hope to be. This is in the middle of the meeting. And it's a discussion of the current code section, the camping ordinance, which Adrian was requesting help for by having someone, myself perhaps, put out a flyer that describes the ordinance and how it can be challenged in court, if it can be, what kind of defenses there are for it.
I've been out for a minute, so I'm trying to catch up. Yeah, we started it up again. There were some people from Huff and People's Aid that used to do it, but we started it up again, what, 3 months ago? Two or three?
Yeah, less than 3 months.
Yeah. We only had 3 weeks off in the 2 or 3 months we've been doing it.
Yeah, we've done 5 sweeps and then 2 or 3 that were off, so that's a stretch.
And these are Krill, that's the last more quiet voice you're hearing, as well as Adrian talking about how they show up every Thursday when the sweeps are happening, and they usually are, after notices have been posted on tents along Coral Street in front of the Funding Matters, also known as Housing Matters area, and help people move their stuff, take photos of what the police are doing, advise the campers of what their rights are, and also what the police and what their responsibilities are, although police don't like to be so advised, of course. They would rather just sweep everything away and spank those bad, bad children, homeless people, tell them not to come back and just go somewhere else. And there, of course, is nowhere else to go that's legal in Santa Cruz.
It's the like, name of an app, like,
Please help me. Like a signal. Please help me.
Yeah, that's just where we do all the communication for the sweeps. So when we send out, like, sweep alerts.
When did and that start? I started that. If you don't mind me asking.
Valid,
because I've been out for a minute, so I'm trying to catch up.
Yeah, we started it up again. There were some people from Huff and People's Aid that used to do it, but we started it up again, what, 3 months ago? 2 or 3?
Yeah, less than 3 months.
Yeah.
2 or 3.
We only had 3 weeks off in the 2 or 3 months we've been doing it.
Yeah, we've done 5 sweeps and then 2 or 3 that were off, so that's a set. 8 weeks.
2 months.
Matter of fact, I recorded, I had a voice recorder on me, and I recorded a lot of stuff, and I drilled Brian Lance about the stuff that's over there, and I did a lot of recording, so when you guys want to do that again, if you'll please just, I don't have eyeballs, there's my phone, that'd be great. And how does that work?
If you want to write your
phone number. You go to Ash, right?
Roach, usually it happens at 7 in the morning on Thursday.
They told me Tuesdays.
Yeah, no, Thursday is when it usually, at least for these two that I've known, it's happened for the last three sweeps Thursdays that I've heard of. So if you just confer with them, maybe at a break in the meeting.
And, yeah, you're right.
You know, no,
right,
I mean,
right.
this is very important what you're doing here, because they can use your help and that of people that you know that can be helpful. So
absolutely, and you know, the reason I was asking you guys how long you've been here. Because I have like 27 years rapport, so that's why I was kind of, and I've been out for a little while because I had stuff to take care of and I just got back. So you guys are new to me. That's why I was trying to figure out who does what and what we're doing. So we're on the same page. Right,
yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
One thing I was thinking about today is I really wanted to, could we pause the recording?
And also, it's quite appropriate to talk about, say, about proposals to put on the...
Don't worry, I'm sweaty. Don't look at me. Oh,
okay. The proposals to clarify whose property it is, indicate that there has been some concern of lost property in the past. We are not considering, this is not an illegal activity to try to consider monitoring and following property. So it actually saves the city from the hospital costs and ambulances, people being dragged, you know, taken to shelter costs and so forth. So it's okay to do this. If you're planning a civil disobedience of any kind, as some groups have done, and I think I don't begrudge them for doing it, and it's more appropriate to do this circumspectly. But if you're talking about the actions that are legal, or actions that may not be entirely legal, but that are in accord with the sentiment of the community, so where that, you know, for example, when the fences were taken down at the beginning of COVID, after Food Not Bombs continued to try to feed around the clock tower and the cops fenced it off, when the Black Lives Matter came, took the fences down and deposited them at the police station. They did that several times. But that happened because of the sentiment of the community. There were large middle class people concerned, actually, for a brief time with people's right not to be shot because of the color of their skin by people with badges and uniforms on. So I wonder, though, is there more on this? Is there something you need from us for next week? Should we take a break so you guys can chat with Roach if you want to see or anybody else about...
Just take five. Why not?
And we can come back and I can roll through the rest of this agenda. And I believe that the... that last Thursday sweep on the 25th didn't get a lot of people, but continued nonetheless, again, spearheaded by Adrian and Krill. And they seem pretty dedicated. And I suspect that, as I always like to say and repeat again, fear can spread quickly, but so can courage. Courage can be contagious. So, also determination and inspiration to correct injustices. It's, I think we all have those feelings inside. And if we realize we're not alone and we can be stronger together, that can make a difference ultimately. Maybe not for us, but for those who come after us. So, so there. And that's the snatch of the Huff meeting that you're going to get. Hopefully next week there'll be the regular institution of a file online on the Huff website at huffsantacruz.org, which is where many of us listen to this anyway, under the name of the show, Bathrobes, Beers, Broadsides. But I think you'll be able to find it more easily, and I'll describe that. Coming up next is what I would call a flashback, but this has never been, to my knowledge, played before. I recorded it on January 7th, 1992. It's two activists, Bonnie Schell and Jane Kaiser, on conservative radio, or you might say reactionary radio, KSCO, talking about their organization, PIRC, Psychiatric Inmates Rights Collective, which, as far as I know, no longer exists. But it should, because we've lost M.H. Can, and the city and the county are either ignoring or taking over these functions, probably with an eye to grabbing the greenbacks and the control of this whole thing, which the whole point is to avoid that control, because it's what many people in psychiatric distress are trying to avoid, or some are anyway. And they want to avoid being doped up and treated in some traditional manner that involves a lot of restrictions. And homeless people in many cases face the same kinds of concerns. They are constantly confronted with rules that they have to follow, which ordinary people do not have to follow because they're somehow regarded as incompetent or evil. They're certainly disabled in some ways, but do you subject disabled people to rules? Are you supposed to? Is that a sensible way of providing healing for folks?
or even treating them as full human beings. I would say, I answer my own question. No, it's not. Ignore the numbers, that phone numbers that are coming on, because I think they're gone. That was almost 35 years ago. And if you want information about Perk and his history, you can try giving me a call at the Huff line, 831-423-4833. And I may try to track down some old timers who are early members of Perk, as well as M.H. Can, which we're still waiting to allow the board to be formed so they can actually do stuff, which they aren't doing. That building is sitting empty up there off of Soquel Avenue. So the M.H. Can building. Anyway, here it is. Check it out. It's an important part of history, and the questions these two raise and try to answer are still very much with us.